Welcome back to the Sights On Podcast. This is Luciano with Alex. Big food isn't going anywhere, and neither is the mass-produced junk. But here is the truth. We hold the power. By tackling our own desires, we can crush our bad food habits and create a brighter future for us and make our options more healthy and more bright. So today we're going to be talking about the secrets to overcoming our bad habits and overcoming laziness.
But first, who are we actually targeting this? We're targeting everybody. Everybody's lazy at times, but some of us are way lazier than the others. We're targeting people, maybe you're healthy, but you go out to eat more than you should. Or maybe you're unhealthy and your main source of eating is from unhealthy fast food, junk food type stuff. So, or maybe you're in the middle. So wherever you are, this is just for all of those who, again, maybe eat too much unhealthy food, too much junk food, too much crap, you know, basically. This is for everyone in a sense. We all eat in America a lot of crap.
Exactly. So let's first take some background history. So up until the 19th century, food had not been mass produced as it was. And mass production back then meant making enough food just for one's own family, not for the rest of society.
Subsistence farming.
So food was not in a sense as it was produced today. Today we have food at our fingertips. It's so mass produced. And we'll talk about this later, but it plays to your laziness. It plays to your ability to get food. You lose your sense of autonomy. You lose that connection to yourself. But first, in ancient Rome, way back when they first started producing food, it was in 350 BCE, they had these Roman bakeries. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time where they actually started to mass produce food for a city. And I found that really interesting that it took 300 bakeries supplying a whole city of 120,000 to make sure that everybody had a producible food. And these 300 bakeries, they made sure that they could mass produce this food, make it well done, and make it at least enough healthy so that people could get the right nutrition.
Well, back then they didn't have all of that. It was usually just bread, right? They're making a lot of bread for people to eat. Bread was like very important, and it still is today, but it was probably the most mass produced thing that they made back then.
And food was really only accessible to the rich. Like, you had to pay for these surpluses of food. Like, the old rich were the only people that could pay for these big wealths of food into their pockets. So that's why you see some fat people like King Louis, all these rich kings, these noblemen, that's why they get fat. That's why they turned the laziness coin towards themselves. But you don't really see this mass production in the sense of today until the Industrial Revolution. And that brought in changes at the time that provided food for the mass societies. But workers in that time still did not earn enough for a just wage. They couldn't take advantage of that surplus of food because they didn't have the means to get that food. They were in the tenants, they were in the factories where they couldn't produce enough money to sustain themselves. That's when you get into the 1900s, when they have the canning, the refrigeration, the agricultural machinery that all makes it worthwhile to create surpluses of food, makes it incentivizing to produce all this food, because now you know that you have all this food to send out to the economy and that you're going to get a lot back from it.
Especially in America, when we went through World War One and World War Two, when we were having to ration food at times, you know, and we were overproducing a ton of food for the war. And so then we basically, after the war, we really like never stopped producing that food. We just like kept producing more and more. And especially as the population grew, we just never have stopped producing. And as technology has advanced, especially too.
And it started with Henry Ford and his assembly line. It's assembly line for cars, but it was produced in a sense for all mass food production industries. And you can see that with the advent of the Quakers. They took their oats and they made mass production lines of oats that just put it out there. And you could see it in all grocery stores that lined the country, the supermarkets and the stores. They could basically produce it for a mass whole population. And that was, like Alex said, furthered by World War II and the global war efforts, and that further produced more factories that were dedicated to mass producing food. So why are we talking about all this mass production of food? It allows us as Americans to just go out there
and eat whenever we want. We can literally, there's almost nowhere in America where you can't just go like eat whatever. You can eat anything at any place in America. You can eat fast food, you can eat healthy, you can eat, just go to the convenience store, there's food everywhere. There's food at our fingertips. You just click on your phone, the food will be delivered in about 30 minutes. You can stay at your own home and have all the food you want, basically.
Exactly. And that sense of there's so much food around you, that's why it's so important to realize how much the media has been around us in this time. Like, when you go back to the 1950s, you see all these supermarkets, they're getting all this food in the stores and all this, and then here, the media hits. That's when television society comes. And when you go back to that mid-20th century, it brought in the McDonaldization era. Basically, what this is that fast food economies, they just went into the market industry and they made their product as good as it could be and as appealing and as addictive as it could be. In that sense, they made it more visually appealing in the ads, because when you go even back further to the 1920s, all they could do was put it into a computer ad. Into a print ad.
Yeah, like a newspaper.
A newspaper ad. And they could put it into a jingle for a radio. Now, today, they can put it into a television ad, and they could put it into any other social media. Yeah. And it makes it more appealing to those people, because appealing to us in a sense, because
what are we doing? We're sitting there, we're watching, and then it's not just one ad. You watch, like, you're not going to sit and watch TV for 10 minutes. You're watching TV for an hour or so many, and then you just keep seeing more and more ads of this food, and eventually you're just like, man, that burger looks really good. And you're like, maybe I'll grab a bit, maybe I'll go over and get one. Sounds good. Haven't eaten anything. I've been sitting on this couch for an hour.
Exactly. And even with the celebrities that come into it too, you play into that role, and then they have so much more power now, in the sense that they can be public with the food. And I watched a video this weekend with Brad Pitt in a Pringles ad, and that just boosted sales for that Pringles ad about 200%, because he was just in it, and that just gets more people eating in that cycle, and then you see how that goes in the future.
Yeah. I mean, you saw with, like, the Travis Scott burger, it was a couple years ago. Everybody was going to McDonald's because they wanted to try the Travis Scott burger. If you put any influencer like LeBron James or Lionel Messi, you put these big sports fan people with their fans, the fans will do anything for their, you know, their icon. So if they go, if LeBron or Lionel Messi gets, like, something, like, McDonald's, like, hey, would you do an advertisement? They will surely, because McDonald's will pay them a lot of money for them just to be shown in the advertisement, and then everyone that loves them will go to their food to buy it, to support them, basically, in a sense, because they saw that their favorite person was there. Now they're like, oh, now I want it. That's cool, you know?
Exactly. And I think that's one of the main factors of the media. Like, they can just put those people in front of them, and then you want to go buy it because they consume it. And then there's other aspects of the media. The second most important thing that I can think of is when you look at the food labels that they have on that package. When I go to the store, they have low fiber written on all of the cereal sections. They have
Heart Association, you know, like everything to tell you that their food is like really healthy.
Or maybe high fiber, and then low fat, and then they have all these things. Oh, we're affiliated with this type of organization. Yeah,
WeFeedKids.com, you know, something like, some sort of organization that makes it look better. But you really, like, you have to do more research than that. Like, you feel like, that's actually just an organization. It's not like, this is healthy for kids. But because they put the word kids on it, right, you automatically think, well, if it's healthy for kids, then that's fine, you know?
Yeah, and they put money into it. They put funding into the researchers that go for those companies. If you take a food corporation, they'll fund researchers to make research that supports the plausibility of consumers eating their food. Yeah. They support that research because, we have we have scientific basing behind our products, so you should buy it. But really who did the research. It was the scientific corporations that were funded by the food corporations.
Funny story, actually. I just, before we started, like a second before we started on Instagram, it said, pizza is healthier than most cereals. So I was like, I can't even believe that. It's just a headline. I didn't read it, but I was like, that is something, like, I want to see, like, who researched, like, who's the research behind this? Was it pizza companies, or was it, like, who did the actual research for this? Like,
bro, it has to be, like, a company from there, because, like, you can't compare
who's eating pizza in the morning, like.
I mean, even cereal itself, like, anybody who promotes cereal, like, those high fructose corn syrup cereal, like Cocoa Puffs, Fruity Cinnamon Pebbles, Toast Cinnamon Toast Petal, they all have these types of sugar. And you say, this is healthy. This is, put a ADA or AHA logo on there.
Yeah, and they add a ton of extra sugar. It's not, like, just the regular amount. It's in that, it's, like, you'll see, like, added 33 extra grams of sugar, and you're like, oh, wow, that's, when you actually put 33 grams of sugar in, like, a glass, you're like, oh, man, that is a lot of sugar. Like,
yeah. But all this is to say, like, we have all this in front of us. This is a big development from prehistoric society where they didn't produce food. Now, today, within the past 100 years, we have all this food in front of us. It's all accessible in front of us because we have a mass production society and
media. We're a consumerism society as well. Like, we just consume, you know?
And we have a media producing society that promotes that food culture. And then we have a consumerism society, like you said, that can't just wait. Can't
no, we wait never to save jump on it. As like Americans mainly, we never save. We just consume. We're like, buy, buy, buy. We never save, save, save. Most Americans, I would say, don't save, save, save. We just buy.
Right. But we're not here to harp on those food companies. We're more here to see how we can adjust ourselves in light of those food companies.
How can we change, basically, like, our lazy habits for better things, like cooking, meal prepping, you know, just like changing our psychological to just saying no to like chips and Cheez-Its and all this like really unhealthy junk food that really is not going to like fill you up and make you give you that nutrition that you really need.
Exactly, exactly. So the bottom line that we believe this is a problem is it's laziness. It's really laziness down to the deep problem of this food epidemic and really any problem in general, but here, it's laziness, and what we define laziness as is dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
For like, me, I believe laziness is a bad outcome. So that's the end result. It's a bad outcome. And why is it a bad outcome? It's because you do things that are unfavorable to yourself, and in the long run, they have a bad outcome. You do things that are a habit, and then it's bad in the long run. So, for example, like, whenever I go to the food market and I buy these types of food, I specifically buy the cereals and I buy all these sugary foods. That's going to be detrimental to me in the long run because I'll have bad health outcomes.
In a sense, it's laziness, right? Because you're just putting the cereal and the milk in a bowl. And instead, you could have had eggs, right? You could have cracked some eggs. You could have turned on the skillet, got some butter in it, and you could have had a real healthy meal, but you picked the sugary thing that's, I mean, at most, it'll wake you up, but it's not really giving you any essentials.
And in this theory, it's not because you don't desire it. It's because you don't think about your choice. You just go with the flow. That is the essence of laziness. It's the lack of drive to motivate your decisions in order to make better outcomes. That's laziness for me.
Yeah, for me, it's more for like people who choose not to do something because of like their own selfish desire. Like we're all selfish at points, but like for your own, like when you choose to eat something like super unhealthy, right? And then that's kind of like your own selfish desire. Like, oh, I really wanted this. And I know we all get there. We all have our points with our own selfish desires, but we have to tell ourselves no, that we can't do that. Like, you have to, like, it's a psychological thing because we've been manipulated over time as we eat this food. We're like, but it's so good. Why do I want to stop? It's just, like, it's delicious, right? So if the food was really bad, nobody would eat it. But then, like, they put all those extra ingredients to make it actually taste good. But I think, like, it's really, like, finding laziness can be shortcuts. It's not efficiency. Efficiency is finding, you know, a more effective way of doing something. But when you find a shortcut that kind of half-asses it and doesn't work all the time, then that's laziness to me.
And that's where the outcome comes into play. If you find a more efficient solution that gets you the half-assed work but gets you the better solution in the long run, by all means, that's not laziness, that's efficiency. And that's being a better human being, because you can maximize your time. First of all, most of us don't have time.
And your health.
And maximize your health, which all of us want in the future.
Yeah, we all want to live longer, right? So that's the point of, like, not, let's say, like, for example, the cereal. I mean, it may maximize your time, but it's not going to maximize your health. So that you're cutting off one of the two main points. So,
And my major assumption is that all people have laziness built into them. It's an innate human characteristic. You have it in you. What you do, your actions are, will dictate if that laziness comes out. That laziness can be all hidden. You see all the major pros and the elite athletes in the world, how they manage their diets. Their laziness is hidden. They have a regulated schedule on how they eat. That's the most strict performance schedule. And then you see all the obesity conditions, the diabetes, all these man-made conditions coming in the last century. That's the opposite spectrum. That's total laziness. All of us have it in this. A total elite athlete can lose track of it and become that lazy.
Oh, yeah. Person. Like someone like LeBron James could totally, like, eat a burger, like a McDonald's Big Mac. But he, like, the thing is different about him is he's not going to eat a Big Mac every day. He may even advertise for to eat the Big Mac, but you know he's really not eating a Big Mac every day. Maybe once in a while he'll have one with his family or something, you know, but he's not eating them all the time, like, for us, as a shortcut to his protein and his, you know, his calorie intake, you know?
And that gets into the question, how does laziness apply to our diet today, Alex?
How does laziness apply to our diet? It's, you know, eating super unhealthy, and then also with these corporations are the laziness of, like, you know, Uber Eats, and then ordering it to your house. Like, we're being so laziness in our own diet that we refuse to cook, and I think a lack of confidence is the reason for that, and a lack of wanting to cook. I think that the laziness inside of us doesn't want us to actually do the work, as we, like, have these easier methods to do things, right? When it's easier, we choose to take the easy way out over the hard way out, over a lot of things. But it seems to, when we're in cooking, that is becoming more of, like, the let's just Grubhub or Uber Eats it, or, you know, let's just go get the Big Mac, instead of, like, actually cooking. You may even have all the ingredients, but you're like, nah, let's just be unhealthy, you know?
It's a matter of, do you want it? Do you desire it? Do you want to get into the position that you are in the future? And how are you going to take it, those steps in between? I can always say that I want to be healthy, but how am I going to do it? And if you don't have that desire in you to actually start cooking, start doing these things that are going to get you in that position, you're never going to.
Yeah, for me, especially, like, I just moved out. I never have really wanted to cook. I've always been kind of lazy. Like, I'll just be straight up. When I was with my parents, a lot of times there was nights where I wouldn't eat that much, and maybe I would just eat a box of Cheez-Its, and that's really, really unhealthy. And at the end, I didn't actually get any nutrition. At, like, 3 a.m., I'd be starving for real food, but I'd just wait till the, like, 6 a.m. to have some eggs and bacon, you know. But if we really, like, start to, like me, I tried to learn how to cook some spaghetti and pasta. I messed it up, but because I got it into a dirty sink by accident because I didn't have a big enough, skewer thing to put all the pasta in and drain all the water out. But I was trying, right? And I ended up having some meatballs and some pasta, and it was still really good. But, like, I'm trying, right? That's the main thing. Like, I've never really cooked before in my life, especially on my own. And so learning how to do it myself now, I'm curious, I'm interested, but I also want to do better for my health, so I'm working on it, you know? Even if I had failed making the dish, I'm not going to give up. I'm going to actually probably remake pasta this weekend and make it again.
I love that, because you're experimenting, you're trying things new, and you made that mistake, and you'll definitely learn from it.
See, I think, though, a lot of people, like, we do all make mistakes, right? But then we stop, we're like, I failed, can't do it, I suck at cooking, let's just go order takeout.
And that stopping doesn't help you, because in the end, are you going to be a better cook if you stop? No, you're going to be a better cook if you keep on continuing making those mistakes. if you are afraid of failure, you will never get to anywhere. I was always ready to have failure in my life because I thought that failure was something that wasn't necessarily good, but it was necessary to success in my life. I've had many successes, but I've always had many failures too. In cooking, for example, there's many times where I burned the stove because it's a simple dish, like eggs, simple. But in the beginning, when I was first cooking eggs, there'd always be a black portion of eggs on the other side.
Yeah.
Over time, those eggs turned out perfect because I knew I have to put in the milk first and then put in the eggs. I whisk up the eggs in the milk and then put it into the pan, fry them up, and then it turns out well. So a lot of these mistakes that we have, they will go away.
Yeah.
In the future. And just taking that step forward and starting to cook, starting to do these things that help you and put you in the situation of failure will help you become.
Yeah, it all just really takes time and patience, like most things. I mean, and one of our main things is just to, like, eat less of that junk, like, you know, those Lay's and the Cheez-Its and the Goldfish, like, at night when you're, like, really hungry. Because, like, I can eat a whole box of Cheez-Its and not feel any nourishment. I could, like, because you just, it never fills you up, right? There's no nutrients inside of the Cheez-Its when you're eating it. Like, I love the extra cheddar ones, but I can finish the whole box in one night if I want while watching a movie because I'm, like, I don't feel any full. I'm not full at all by the end of the box.
Yeah, I was never full either. It's just like empty calories. You're just stuffing it down your throat and then you don't feel full after.
No, you don't feel full. You could go eat, keep eating.
Yeah.
That's why. And it's addictive, right? Because, like, realistically, that is super unhealthy of me to eat a whole box of Cheez-Its in one sitting watching a movie.
Yeah. That's why I stopped eating snacks about 2 years ago because I realized that what's the point of eating the snack if I'm not going to get any nutritional value? It's not improving my body at all. My muscles don't really gain anything. My fat does. My fat truly gains from that. It just.
And I want to say, like, you can eat snacks, like, occasionally, especially, like, at parties and stuff like that, you know? But, like, when on your own sitting, like, try not to, you know?
Mm-hmm. Try not to because it really doesn't add any nutritional value.
And the main thing I've learned is, like, it's really, like, if you don't have them, the better. Like, if you have a box of Cheez-Its, let's say, in your house, you're going to eventually eat them, right? Like, you didn't buy the box of Cheez-Its not to eat them. And you don't want to throw them away. That's wasteful. But it's really hard to not just sit there and eat them. So my main thing is just not to buy them at all. Like, don't buy any of that junk food that you can. I try not to buy, like, as much junk food as I can. Like, I don't want to have it because I know I'm going to eat it really fast.
Yeah, like, out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, kind of thing. And that's the only thing that's really worked for me. Again, like, if you have it, you'll eat it, so don't have it.
Right. So how do you make sure that if you are at the store and you see that box, how do you prevent yourself from buying?
Just don't go down those aisles. You know those aisles are way in the back too. It's at least at my local Walmarts. I don't know anyone that keeps the snacks way at the front. Well, they keep all that crap of, like, candy and, like, different stuff right at the checkout. But
right at the checkout.
So just get through it. It's like sin. Just run away. Get to the checkout as fast as you can. But maybe just don't go down the chip aisle, the soda aisle type things. Those are, like, obviously, like, you look down those aisles, those all those colors that kind of, like, get you when you go in there. And you're like, whoa, and then all those, like, different flavors of different things, and it's addictive, like, and you just want to pick one up, they're so light, you just throw it in the cart, and then forget about it and keep going, but you're eventually going to eat it, and again, it's okay to snack occasionally, but there's a lot of people that, like, just grab a ton of those snacks, and then those snacks become a main part of their meal every day in something, you know?
It's a habit, because you know that that's the particular dessert that you'll always have that night. Or that's the Friday night dinner that you'll always have with that cheesecake on the side. And you always have that on a Friday night. So you need to buy it every single time. No, just don't buy it because keep it out of sight, out of mind.
Well, especially if you want to get healthier, right? Like, you don't continuously keep eating chips. Continuously eating chips does not make you healthy. So, like, just don't eat them. If you're trying to, like, lose weight or just stay generally healthy, right? A lot of these chips can have, like, different effects, you know? So,
but the key factor, these are all, like, rudimentary solutions. They're, like, simple. They're very simple. But the real issue is you have to want it. You have to take this solution and apply it to your own life. These may not be the best solutions that apply to you because you know your body, you know yourself. But you have to be able to want it. You have to be able to desire it, and you have to be able to go and look for the solutions that work best for you. For example, for me, I found it best, like Alex, not to look at those things at all. If I even see a sweet in the house, I throw it in the trash. And when I go back to my parents' house, if they have sweets out, I take it from their hands and to check it out.
You're better than me, because I would be like, all right, instead of y'all eating it, I'm gonna
because I know in the long run, after a couple days, 5 days, if those sweets are still in the house, of course they're gonna end up in my stomach. If those sweets are not in the house after 5 days, I'm fine with that.
And the thing is, like, there's no expiration date on any of this stuff, so that kind of stuff never goes away. You always keep the chips, you always keep the candy, it never expires, it can sit there forever.
High shelf life, yeah. High shelf life. They make those preservatives into those foods, and you always have them in your house, so one way or another, you're going to eat them.
Yeah. Have any, like, other solutions, though, like, or ideas of, like, how to, like, change our diet?
This is one that my family has practiced over past, 20 years of my life and my mom and dad's life. They meal prep. I mean, this is a very simple solution, and it's very intuitive. You know what you're going to eat before you enter the week so that you don't eat more than you need to. And what they do is on a Sunday night, they go into the kitchen, they get all the ingredients they want, and they chop it all up, and they cook about 10 meals for the whole week so that we have 2 meals each day, one for lunch, one for dinner, and breakfast is just like anything you can wrap up, because breakfast is pretty easy to cook.
It should be really easy. It's usually eggs, actually, yeah, for me.
And then we go into the kitchen, we get it out of the Pyrex dishes and warm them up and have them for lunch and dinner. And that's very easy. I mean, I take it to school in a small lunch container, and that's very easy for me because I don't have to waste so much time going to a restaurant, coming back. That's wasted time. That's 30 minutes. And then sitting at the restaurant, waiting for them to cook the food. If I go to Chipotle, I get it right there, but I have to sit in the restaurant and eat the food, go back in the car, go back home. And that's just time that I don't want to waste, especially as a medical student here in I don't have that time to waste, so cooking on a Sunday night is a very good technique if you want to save time.
Yeah, I definitely want to try meal prepping. I haven't, but I bought the meal prep boxes, kind of like the gym style. It's just a plastic container. You put your food in. I'm going to start making, like, salads with some chicken, basically Cobb salads. That's what I'm going to start making. I bought a little thing to make boiled eggs and everything, and, like, I'm going shopping tomorrow, actually, to get all the ingredients to meal prep for when I'm at school. I go to school 3 days a week, so I want to be able to meal prep for those 3 days. So that way, when I have a break in between, like one of the classes, a good hour. So if I can use the hour to eat and look over stuff, like that'll, you know, give me more energy to get through the rest of the day. So instead of going to the local, like I think there's a Fuzzy Taco in Tamar University or the Chick-fil-A or something. So
yeah, and it saves you time. You don't have to.
Save me time, and it's going to save me money. Because
saves you money.
These things, like, I want to get through this myth real quick. Fast food is not cheap, but all these companies will tell you that their stuff is really cheap, but it's not.
It's not. Like, fast food, it's not fast, and it doesn't save you time. You think it's fast because you get in the line, and then you get the food. It's right there prepared for you. But really, when you stand in that line, if you calculate it and how much time they take to prepare the food and how much time you spend going to that restaurant and coming back.
And waiting. Yeah.
It's way more than if you were to cook at home. I can guarantee that. Because all you do when you cook at home, all you do is go to the grocery store once per month. If that's for a single individual. For a big family, you probably want to go
once a week.
Once or once every 2 weeks. But once a month, that's one time a month you go to the grocery store, get all your groceries. Then you do one time per week. You cook once for 3 hours. That's for the whole week.
If you wanted to do that, you could do, if you cut it out in a couple of days, you could do just, you just need about 1 hour to cook a really good meal for like,
for 3 days.
Yeah.
So 1 hour for 3 days, and that amounts to about 2 to 3 hours per week of cooking. So let's take that high number, 12 hours of cooking, and let's say 1 hour of going to the grocery mm-hmm. store. But even now today, you can go online and get all your groceries, and it delivers it to your door. So you can
If you really don't even have the time to grocery shop, you could just send them right to your house.
Now let's calculate fast food time. Fast food time, you're going to have 2 meals per day, even 3 if you're going for breakfast. And that's 15 minutes to get to the store, 15 minutes to get back. So that's 30 minutes for each meal. So that's 1 hour and 30 minutes per day, plus about 15 to 20 minutes for eating if you're fast. If you're not fast, that's 30. So that's about 1 hour per meal.
Yeah, and also let's remember that like
3 times 7, each 21 hours of eating.
Meal is like, at least at Whataburger, it's about like $12 for a meal. So if you do like 12 times 3, right, that's 36. Am I right?
Say that again?
12 times 3, 36?
Yeah.
What about it? $36 a day to eat fast.
Yeah. Suppose. Yeah. And if you do the calculations, let's just take 10 to make it easy. You get $10 a meal times 30 meals per, let's say, 90 meals per month, because you have 33 meals and 30 days per month. So I got the calculations here. 90 meals per month times 10. So that you're spending $900 per month on meals.
Mm-hmm.
So 900 times 12, you're spending around $10,950.
Just on eating out.
On eating out.
Now, how much would it cost me if I didn't eat out as much? Of course, we occasionally all eat out. But if I just mainly stuck to buying my food at the grocery store, Lucci, how much am I going to pay?
So I made a big list on like basic food products that you might eat. So meat, I put in pork, I put in chicken, I put in grains, which is like bread if you have it for breakfast, eggs, milk, vegetables, fruit.
Like paper towels, toilet paper type thing.
Yeah.
Essentials.
Essentials. Dessert, if you want a dessert. I mean, you have to enjoy sometimes.
Yeah, you gotta indulge in some bad things sometimes. I don't always best. Like, we get it, but not all the time, right? That's our main thing.
And then protein shakes, because I'm a big protein shake guy, so I get some. And then that would amount to, protein shakes are actually the most expensive thing on this list, about $26.50, but that's for about 18 protein shakes. That would be my breakfast, because that's just a quick thing on the go. I can take it to school, drink it, and then I only have to worry about lunch and dinner. And then paper towels, I put that in here too, because that's very important for like wiping your hands during meals. So that's $20 for a month. Then I put in energy to cook, and I calculated this from 11 cents per kilowatt, and I per hour, and then I multiplied that by the cost it would take per month, which is about 12 hours of cooking on the high side. So what we have is about $127 per month, whereas you're spending $900 in fast food.
And I watch a ton of people, by the way, on this guy called Caleb Hammer, who from Financial Audit. And when I see people and they show me, how much you spend on going out to eat? $900! And he freaks out, because it's like, who spends $900 on going out to eat? We cannot be spending. Like, that's a lot.
People do.
A lot of people do. A lot of people go out to eat all the time, and they think about it as nothing. But then you got to imply, sometimes, especially even at restaurants or anywhere, you got to tip now for everything. So, because we have a bad tipping culture here. Because nobody wants to pay their employees enough. But, like, we didn't even add that to the thing of, like, when you're going out to eat, you got to tip. Say you added 20% to this. Now make that
money. Yeah, for sure. I mean, that alone would add about 15 to 20% on that thing. And even with this, when you take account to the whole year, let's say the whole year for groceries, it only accounts to $1,700. Versus $10,950 at the fast food restaurants. That's over a 600% increase. That's over $9,000 more spent. So objectively, cooking at home is more efficient in time, more efficient in
your health.
Health, and more efficient in money. And you might say, well, I'm not good at cooking and this will take me so long. I agree with you.
Everything takes time,
It takes time to practices cooking, and it takes time to
get good at stuff.
Get good at it.
Nobody is good at anything right at the bat. It's just combating our own laziness again, getting through our psychologicalness of like not wanting to cook and being like, okay, no, I'm actually going to learn something, you know?
Mm-hmm. And you can take these facts and put them in your pocket, but you have to have the desire to want to save this money. If money is not the factor that you don't want to save, then it's going to be exponentially harder, because money itself is a driving factor in this. It's over a 600% increase. So money itself should tell you, don't put your money here, put your money in this other situation. And time itself, you'll get better and you'll learn that you can cook 5-minute quick meals.
Yeah.
5-minute quick meals are just things that you put in the, and you put on the stove and you let it cook without you even touching it. So for example, Alex cooked pasta. He just put it in the stove. He didn't have to monitor it. In the future, I mean, you might not do that now, but the future, you will get to the point where you just put on the stove, put a timer, and then just
leave. I definitely need to monitor now because I almost started a fire. So,
We'll get there. I can imagine just starting out. You don't want to do that yet, but for me, what I do is that I go into the kitchen and I just put a timer, set it out, and then turn off the stove, and then just boil some noodles. Then I come back, and then it's ready. So that's 5-minute quick meals there. You don't have to spend so much time. You can just go into the kitchen. It's done. And then come out, save time, save money, and save your health.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a couple other ideas I've seen out there of, like, how do we combat this? If we had, like, more marketing restrictions, which I think would be really hard. It's not a solution we can, but if you had less marketing, which I think a lot of people would say would go against maybe like our First Amendment. But like if there was less marketing, right, on like certain times, like let's say like at night, right, when you're sitting in bed watching TV and then the Jack in the Box commercial comes on and now you're really wanting food. If they didn't really have like, if they had a certain time limit these, you know, commercials could be on, like, or just restricted at all. Like, you know how like cigarette companies used to be able to be on TV and now they can't. If food companies kind of have that same restriction to limit it because their food is so addictive, you know, then maybe that could work. I'm not 100% sure on that one. I don't love the idea. We also have like food labels. I know if anyone's ever been to like out in Europe, you know, they have food cigarette labels on the food that shows like someone's lungs and they're all completely like, you know, they look horrible because someone like a smoker's lungs compared to someone's healthy lungs and stuff like that on the packaging. So that way you know basically what you're getting into when you open that pack of cigarettes, right? And if we did the same thing but applied it to food, that could possibly change someone psychologically to not want those bag of chips or not want the Cheez-Its or whatever junky food that they're, you know, trying to get you to buy.
Yeah, because in the long run, these foods, they will be detrimental to the human population. We will get more fat as we age along into the 21st and the end of the 21st century and the start of the 22nd. Humans will, like, a majority of humans will have these man-made conditions. And you even see that now, about 40% of adults, they're overweight. And about a smaller percentage of that, 20%, are obese. That percentage will continue to rise if we don't take a step in it. And we're talking in the individual sense here in the podcast. But these existential solutions to the government trying to step in, they are essential too, because food labels, if you put them on it, the psychology of it is that you will not buy it because you have that stigmatism in your brain that anything with a food label on it, if it's labeled cancerous, you're not going to buy it. If it's labeled high fructose corn syrup, very bad for your health, you're not going to buy it. It's just, how would you implement it into this government society? It takes a lot of effort in the government because it's like an inertia block in the government. They don't want to move. They don't want to budge. They don't want to put these laws into action because they're already benefiting from it. They have all this funding that comes from
the corporations, the
food corporations, the lobbyists that come from the food corporations. They put these actions into the government and they lobby for their food to be
sold on, you know,
subsidized and probably put the government labels on it that help them fund it into a consumer society. So it's a very tough issue regulating this in government, but it's very necessary to see this, or else humans will be like big floppy obese people that always sit on couches and that are subject to the will of their senses, like their tongue, which basically it's means that you're just living to get pleasure from eating and gratifying that taste buds in your tongue.
Yeah, I was thinking of another solution. I was just thinking about it, like spitballing here, but if we actually started to, like, in high school, like, if you had to take I know you can take it in middle school, like, a real cooking class, but imagine you actually had to learn, like, take it for a couple of years, and you had to learn how to, like, cook and, like, make different things, so that and get graded on it. Like, you start with eggs, and they teach you how to cook actual meat and chicken, and how to, like, basically cook all the daily essentials, like, at school. Then it would educate people on, like, cooking, like, healthy things, obviously, right? And maybe that would, like, start something new in younger generations and younger people to, like, just cook.
Mm-hmm. That's definitely a good solution, because you start from the bottom up and you make it like a grade, and people will choose wisely and they will learn those skills over time. And
especially if they had to learn, like, unhealthy from healthy, you know, how to cook it healthy, you know, what not to buy, what to buy, you know, different things to be graded on, that could actually be, like, beneficial.
It would be beneficial, and not many schools do this. We in our school, we had a culinary academy,
but you had to be part of that academy,
and it was optional, like, you had to do, and you had to dedicate about a certain amount of years. But if that academy was put into, like, I'd say about middle school, that's when you start to,
well, imagine start. It was mandatory, right? Everyone had to take 2 years of it or something like that, kind of like Spanish or something.
Mm-hmm. If it was mandatory, then yeah, it would probably do really good, because then you learn those skills and then you know how to cook by the time you get out of college, instead of learning some offhandish ELA thing that doesn't really benefit your mind at all.
Yeah, and our last kind of final solution is, like, when you just have to think long-term about your health, right, Luigi, how would you think long-term about these really unhealthy fast, junk food, ultra-processed type foods?
Long-term health is essential, and you have to have that goal. I always think about what this food in front of me will do to me in the future. Even if it's a bowl of cereal, even if it's a lemon bar that I'm having on a Friday night because I want to enjoy, I think about that. Is this bowl of cereal going to help me in the future? And really, that lemon bar isn't, but you still have to have some balance in your life too. Like, we're not saying that this is a strict no.
Like, you can't have Nutty Buddies anymore, but obviously, like, we don't want you eating Nutty Buddies day after day after day. And maybe that's, like, your lunch. It's just a Nutty Buddy. Like, no, make a sandwich, you know, put some mayo, get some cheese, get some turkey. There you go. It's way better than a Nutty Buddy. And that's, like, your lunch, you know?
So I really do think about how these types of food, I think about how much calories they are, how much macromolecules are in there. Is there protein, enough protein in my meal? Is there enough carbohydrates? Is there enough vegetables? Am I getting the enough vitamins that I have for the day? Am I getting the amount of lipids and the fats that I need for this type of meal? And is this sustainable over amount of time? Is this cost effective? Should I really buy beef in the store? Should I really buy pork? Which one is more healthy for me? Which one's more cost effective? I think about these things because I know in the future it will benefit my health, because so many people in the medical, like in the medical field, they don't realize that educating people on diet is the way to prevent diseases in the future. If you educate people on diet, then you don't have to treat the diseases in the future. The diseases in the future, they're horrible. You don't want to have them at all. When you think of these diseases, they're really bad. They drastically reduce the quality of life. You're not going to live a day without thinking about what you have inside your body. Let's take esophageal cancer, for example. This is a cancer of the inner lining of your throat. And this is the worst thing, because every time you swallow, you always feel that pain and you can never put things down. And how you damage your esophageal lining is you eat a lot of high fat, high protein food that messes up your stomach and makes this acid come alive to digest that food, because acid is needed to digest food. And if you have that acid prolonged over periods of time, then that acid comes up from your stomach into your esophagus and burns it up. And when it burns the esophagus up, it starts to make reactions that make cells die, and then cancer starts to form in the midst of it, because when cells are attacked, they tend to mutate. And if you eat those things now and you don't realize how much it will affect you in the future, it will make you pay for it. And that's what I always think of. Do I really want this consequence? Do I really want a cancer in my body? Do I really want to treat my body this way? Is my body something that is given to me by a creator, and should I treat it nicely, or should I just use it for its pleasure and seek it now and not realize what will happen in the future? That's how I approach the long-term decision.
I mean, that's kind of like our main point, is that like your own laziness cannot be solved. It can only be solved by you. Nobody can change your laziness. It's all about your own motivations, your own wants and needs, basically. You have to put your needs over your wants, you know, at the very end of that. You have to make the decision to change your life for the better.
Mm-hmm. And it's your life. It's not anybody else's. You have the power to change it. You have the power to destroy it.
I mean, that's what God gave us, free will. We have the free will to either be unhealthy or to be healthy, or to be, you have the free will to be lazy, or you can be very proactive and get a lot of stuff done. So, I mean, at the end of the day, that is kind of our main goal, is that it's really up to y'all, the viewer, to decide what you're going to do with your health, with your life. You know, are you going to sleep in all day, or are you actually going to get up and get some work done? Are you going to actually cook and make some healthy meals, or are you just going to keep eating the way you do? And until something happens, usually something like medical, when you finally hit that tipping point and then you're like, man, I really need to change my life. You can obviously stop that earlier and stop those, you know, consequences from happening. If you just had changed it earlier, maybe you could have fixed it, but...
Mm-hmm. And it really is a tipping point. That point to where you are disciplined, where you can tip this way, and this is where you have all your success in life. This is where you'll become the most disciplined type of human being, and you will have the better outcomes. You'll have more money in your bank account. You'll have more health in the long term. Tip this way, in the future, you'll be paying for it. You'll get a cancer. You'll get something that you don't want. You'll find that you are throwing up all the time because you can't put things down, and your bank account's going to be close to none.
Yeah, but it all, you know, as we've been saying, it all starts with you. You have to either sway away, or you can sway towards like getting better. Start changing your outcome, start changing your life. But it all starts with the person. Like, we can sit here and talk and tell you to do all this and try to be better, and us ourselves try to be better at eating better, especially like me. Like, I do intentionally, like, sometimes I eat really unhealthy stuff and I don't actually eat, but I can swing this way and start to change the way I'm eating, start eating, you know, chicken breasts and like salads, and start meal prepping and actually start working on my health. Or I can just stay where I'm at right now and occasionally keep swinging this way instead of never swinging that way, right? It's harder to go to the right and actually do better than to just continuously stay right where you're at and keep going backwards and never moving forward. That's the main thing. Do you have to move forward to do better, to stop being lazy?
Yeah. And I'll just repeat the story that you told me earlier. It was the college student that you tell someone to go to college all the time. It will not resonate with that person. Only if that person wants to go to college will they go to college.
Yeah.
Only will that person eat well if they truly want to eat well. Only will that person do things better for themselves if they truly value themselves.
Yeah. It's all our self-choice. And like I said, God gave us that free will, so it's up to everybody to make the choice. We just hope that everybody makes the right choices.
Yeah. And I would challenge you to know your psychology, know how your mind thinks. When you think about that cereal, when you think about that chocolate bar, when you think about that M&M's candy, when you think about that truffle,
let's think about like the Cheez-Its and the Lay's and like all those really good snacky salty foods that when it touches your tongue, you just want more. those Doritos, those, you know, those nacho Doritos. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Know what you think. Like, what makes it so appealing? And in that moment, focus on that desire. Is this desire, and ask yourself, is this desire something that truly benefits my body, truly benefits my well-being? If it doesn't well benefit your well-being, throw it out the door. If it does benefit your well-being, then incorporate it into your life so that you can make yourself the best human being possible. Because that's really the crux of this. Laziness makes you the worst human being that you can be. The opposite of that, discipline makes you into the best human you can be. It makes you more empowered, more autonomous. You get to control your own life. Laziness is really the thing that controls your life. So either be in control or let someone else control it. Let fate control it. Let me and Alex control it. We will control it if you allow us. We'll bring you on this journey to being a better human being. But really knowing yourself really is the first step.
It's all about you. Just starting that journey of actually wanting to improve. It all starts with wanting to improve. If you don't want to improve, you sit right where you're at.
So this episode was focused on laziness and how it applied to food and how it applies to your diet. First, we capped on big food will always be here because it's not going to go anywhere. Government, its tentacles are engrossed in government and it will never move from government because government and food corporations are intertwined.
Yeah.
And then we discussed how that came to be, how mass food production became so essential to our society and how food is always at our fingertips in the sense of it's right there in front of us and it's right there on our phones and our TV screens. Then we talked about laziness and how that applied to us. What do we define laziness as?
Yeah.
Then the last thing that we talked about was solutions and ideas to this problem. And Alex will go over them, those four solutions.
Yeah, we got, you know, meal prepping. Some of these, like, marketing restrictions will have to, that would take, you know, some government timing to make those restrictions. We, as people, can't do that. That takes the government's help with that. We have food labels, putting labels on the food to make it, you know, to show the health effects that it could cause. And then thinking long-term more about your health than what we really do. So if we actually took more time to think about like what the long-term effects of this, kind of like going into the food labels, what the effects could be, then maybe we wouldn't eat this food as much. Like Lucci was saying in his story about like when out every time he eats certain things, he always thinks about, you know, the long-term effects of it.
And then we gave
what we would say would be our climax, our tipping point of like really like why we're telling you all this, you know, and how, like, if you want to improve, how do you do it? You have to hit that start button, you know?
Mm-hmm. Start button is usually the most hard thing to press because you're basically saying, I don't want to do this because it's so hard, but
I don't want to do this because I have my own selfish desires. That's also why.
It's also why. And then if you do press it, if you do start this task of getting yourself into a better human being, you'll realize that you empower yourself so much.
Yeah.
And you'll embark on a journey that truly empowers you, makes you into a more disciplined, makes you more into a person that you want to be. I mean, I've always wanted to be someone who could maximize my potential, someone who always sees in the future of the goal. And then how do I get there? Not in an abyss, like where am I going? Like there's no goal in mind. I want to have a goal and I want to get there. That's something that I've always been. If you truly want to improve yourself, you have to have a goal. And that goal in this scenario, it's not necessarily the diet, but the true goal is improving yourself, knowing what gets you, what causes you to not start, what causes you to be in that laziness.
Yeah.
Then we talked about the tipping point where this side of the curve, eternal success, this side of the curve, internal damnation, and
yeah,
that's about it for this episode. So Yeah, this was the discussion on food and how it relates to laziness. This is a part of the series on our battle against laziness, because we think that laziness is really the true root of all human problems. If you can solve laziness, you can solve anything that...
Well, we wouldn't have any problems, right? Everybody would do the right thing. Everybody would fix things, you know. Everything would just flow really well. But when we get lazy, we hit a big stump in the road, and like that really stops our production as a society. When we start to get lazy and we start to cut corners on things, you know, and it happens with everything. It happens with companies. It happens with people. It just happens. It's part of our DNA and our humans. We just get tired. We get lazy. Stop wanting to put in that work. And again, we're going to start having more episodes combining laziness. Maybe it's with our finances and how people are really lazy with their finances. And like we said, people spend $900 on going out to eat. So a future episode may have like it all be about finances and just different parts of how laziness is in our society kind of thing.
Because laziness by itself won't hurt us, but laziness with our habits and actions in the future will hurt us. So how can we do that? We can all join on this journey together. Please check out our websites that we have that are posted on. So we have Apple Podcasts, we have
Spotify,
we have Instagram. But most of all, please subscribe to this YouTube channel. We want to grow this and we want to make this possible in the future.
Yeah, if you made it all the way to the end, we really hope that you can subscribe. Check out our TikTok. Our TikTok does really well. Check us all out everywhere. Give us a follow. Give us a like. We'd really, really appreciate it as we're growing slowly over time and we're putting in this effort to make this content. We really appreciate all of y'all who listen and watch. So we really always thank y'all for coming here and supporting us. Lucio, do you have anything else?
No. Oh, that's it. I mean, thank you for listening. This is the Sights On Podcast with Luciano and Alex.
This is Sights On, signing off.